Hey, good morning, everybody. Today's daf is Basra Daf Kuf Yud Beis. We are holding on the very top of Daf Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, and we are up to Mai VeOmer on the second line of the page. Today's shiur is sponsored by Dr. David Lander, in honor of his wife and children, and Lila Nishvas's mother, Golda Basimcha LaShalom, as well as by Daniel Sadian for the success of Klal Yisrael in these times, and Hatzlacha for our soldiers and our captives. They should return home safely, as well as by an appreciative daf listener for the accessibility of the shiur, as well as by Rabbi Meir Bruckheimer in loving memory of Hindel Bas Eliyakim HaKohen, Zichrono Levracha, as well as by the Badrian and Ginellis families, Le'ili Nishmas Rav Tzvi Hirsch Ben Avigdor, and Bela Bas Rav Tzvi Hirsch, whose yard sites are today. We thank all of the sponsors very, very much for the sponsorship. So we ended yesterday's shiur by quoting five different psukim to teach us the concept of Yerushas Habal. We kept on saying a pasuk and va'omer, va'omer, va'omer. We kept on quoting more and more psukim that highlight to us the possibility or the fact that a husband is Yoresh's wife. So the Gemara today is going to start with my va'omer. Why is it that I need five psukim to teach what seems like the very same halacha? Then the Gemara is going to discuss whether there's a problem of a girl marrying a man from a different shevet because she's being mavir the nachlas shevet aviha to that different shevet, meaning she yarshint her father's nachla, and now she's going to marry a man from a different shevet, and that husband's going to yarshin her, so she's going to be mavir the nachla from her father's shevet to her husband's shevet. But is there a problem for a girl to bring her mother's Yerusha into a different shevet? Meaning that very same girl may have also yarshined her mother. So when she marries a man from the same shevet as her father, that may not have solved the problem entirely. She didn't take her father's Yerusha into a different shevet, but she may have taken her mother's Yerusha into a different shevet. So is there going to be a problem with that? And then at the end of the daf, we're going to quote a brisa or two, again, that relate to this issue of taking the nachla from one shevet to another shevet, both in terms of, and the Gemara is going to talk about this extensively, both in terms of the fact that her husband might yarshin her, that's one issue, or her husband might not yarshin her, the husband might die first, but her sons might yarshin her. And in either case, the nachla is going into a new shevet, because her sons obviously have the same shevet as her husband. So, okay, so let's begin. Second line on the page, on daf, Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph. Mai va'omer. Why do I need so many psukim to tell me the din that a husband yarshins his wife? So says the Gemara, the first pasuk that we quoted is to darshin the concept of Yerusha Sabal. Right? The pasuk had said, V'kol bas yoreshes nachla mimatos b'nei Yisrael le'echad mimshrachas mate aviyah t'il li'isha l'man yirshu b'nei Yisrael ish nachla savosav. And that teaches me the basic concept of Yerusha Sabal. But v'chitem, maybe you're going to say, no, it doesn't tell me anything about Yerusha Sabal. It's just telling me she has to marry a man who's from the same shevet as her father because of Yerusha-related issues, but that doesn't necessarily indicate to me that her husband yarshins her, and that's what we're concerned about, that her husband is going to yarshin the estate that she got from her father. No, v'chitema b'sibas habein kokopitkra. The Torah doesn't want her marrying outside of her shevet, not because her husband's going to yarshin her, but because she's going to have a son, and that son will yarshin her, and that son is going to be from the shevet of her husband. So she's going to be taking the nachla from her father's shevet and bringing it to her son's shevet. So maybe the husband taka does not yarshin her, aval bal lo yaris. Maybe a husband is not Yorish's wife whatsoever. And the Rashbam points out, and it would be very mistaber to say that, because that a son would yarshin her much more so than a husband would yarshin her, because the son is considered a closer relative than the husband, which is an interesting line for the Rashbam to say, that a son is considered a closer relative than the husband, considering that we have a concept of ishto kigufo. Normally, when it comes to le'edus. So a parent is pasul le'edus for a child. Why? Because they're related. Why is it that a husband and a wife are pasul le'edus? Not because they're related, because they're the same person. Meaning it's not even that they're related. It's ishto kigufo. It's not even it's not a step removed. But legabe these halachos we're suggesting when it comes to dina yerusha, the Rashbam is suggesting this. What's that?
She is more shared to the mother than she is to her husband.
Right, I mean they share a gene pool. Yeah, so the so when it comes to certain halachos like edus, it's perhaps that the husband's considered closer. The gabe other halachos that the son is considered closer. So the Gemara is suggesting that that maybe the reason she's not allowed to marry out of her shevet has nothing to do with the husband yarshining her. It's because the son is going to yarshin her. So that's why Tashima. That's why we needed a second pasuk where the pasuk says v'lo tisov nachla l'bnei Yisrael mimata el mata, that you can't bring the nachla from one tribe to another. And if the first pasuk is talking about the concern that the son will yarshin her, I don't need two psukim to tell me about that same concern, that the son is going to yarshin her. Why do I have a second pasuk? It must be telling me that the husband will yarshin her. So I have one pasuk that says that a son will yarshin his mother, and another pasuk that says that a husband will yarshin his wife. V'chi tema, maybe you're going to tell me, no, both of these psukim are talking about a son yarshining the mother. And why is it that I have two psukim? Lavra, love, belav, v'asei. The first pasuk says it in the lashon of a mitzvah sasei, that she should marry someone from her own shevet, from her father's shevet, and you don't get malchus for a violation of an asei. So comes the second pasuk and says it b'lashon lo sasei, and b'lashon lo sasei, that you're going to get malchus for. So tashema. So that's why we quote a third pasuk, Lotis of Nachla Mimata Lamata Acher. And in that pasuk, it talks about the, also says Lashon Isser, right? So it talks about an Isser of Havaras Nachla. And if the two first psukim are both talking about the son yarshining her, so this third pasuk must be talking about the husband yarshining her. So from that third pasuk, you see that Taka, the husband, is gonna yarshin his wife's estate. The Rashbam points out, even though from the mitzvah sasei itself, we could learn the lav, because if the Torah is telling her she can only marry someone from her own shevet, from her own father's shevet, so I know that it's obviously usher for her to marry somebody from a different shevet, but the din is that a lav haba michlal asay is as a din of an asay. I mean, the halacha is that even though there's a don't that could be derived from something that the Torah formulates in the positive, that don't is still just a mitzvah sasei. It would not be a lo sasei. So I need the formulation of the Torah to be in a lo sasei form if we're going to give her malchus for anything. Otherwise, she would not get malchus. So this is the concept of lavra love belav ve'asei, that we want the Torah wants that she should be in violation of both a lav and an asei. Rav Elchanan in Kovitz Shiurim says, you know, when exactly is the moment of this iser? At what point does she violate this iser of marrying someone from a different shevet? So he writes, if the pasuk is concerned, what the Gemara is struggling with, what's the pasuk concerned about? That who's going to yarshin her? That her husband's going to yarshin her? Or that her son is going to yarshin her? So Rav Elchanan says, if the pasuk is concerned that her husband's going to yarshin her, so it would seem that the iser is violated b'shas nisuin, not b'shas erisin, because b'shas erisin he still doesn't yarshin her. He only becomes her yoresh at the shas nisuin. But if the Torah is concerned about asab asaben, if the Torah is concerned not that the husband is going to yarshin her, but that the son is going to yarshin her, even b'shas nisuin l'chora she hasn't violated anything. It would only be b'shas bia that she violates anything. It's only through a bia that she can actually become pregnant and have a child who's going to take the nachla. But then he says, maybe the issur is tali va'omed at shas aleda, meaning whenever it comes to something that's tali on having a child, so the maisa that leads to having a child is a bia, but there's still no child that's ra'oi until the time of the leda itself. And if she doesn't give birth, then it will be mispar l'mafreya that they never violated the issur. But the bia itself, you're not allowed to do that bia because it might lead to a child, but the bia itself is not the shas iser at all. And then he quotes that which the Tosa Rush says, legabe a woman that if you warn her b'shas nisuin, it's asra safik, because she doesn't know who's going to yarshin her at the end. Is it going to be her son? Is it going to be her husband? And the iser is only because of hasava sabal. So you see that the moment of the iser is not b'shas nisuin, it's only the besof when she actually dies and the Yerusha actually changes hands. Meaning what the struggle seems to be that Rav Chanan is having over here is, what exactly is the iser over here? Is the iser the actual passing of the nachla, the actual giving of the nachla to a different shevet, or is the iser an iser of marriage? Just like, you know, let him marry people from Mitzri and certain and Adomi and Maliki, whatever the isurim are in marriages that a person might have, Kohen marrying a grusha, so maybe there's an iser of marriage. You don't let him marry someone outside of your shevet. The Tama Iser is because ultimately that will likely lead to the Nachla going from, or maybe no, maybe the actual Iser is the Havaras Nachla. It's not an Iser in marriage. So Nafkamina is going to be when exactly the Shasa Iser is. And the huge Nafkamina when the Shasa Iser is one, if we're going to say that Yechayv Malkus for this Iser, when's the Hasra'a? So if it's it would be very difficult to imagine how one could do Hasra'a right before the moment of Yerusha. If that's the time of the Isser, where's Hasra'a going to be? As she's about to die? You say, you better not die, meaning the Hasra'a would have to be on a Maisa Isser that she did, but the Maisa, there is no Maisa Isser. The Maisa, it's just the Isser, something that happens Memela. So that's why Vilchanan assumes that it must be that the Isser is earlier on, until he saw that Tosa Rush. He assumed the Isser must be earlier on. The Isser must be in the marriage or in the Bia, in doing an actual Maisa itself. So anyway, so now we explained why we need three Psukim. First two Psukim to tell me that she can't marry out of her Shevet because of her son might yarshin her and to violate both a lav and an asay, and then a third pasuk to tell me that she can't marry out of her shevet because the husband might yarshin her and there's an issur to be maver nachla to the husband. So, but we had five pasukim. So far we only covered three of them, right? So v'chi teima, and if you're going to say that pasuk is also talking about the son yarshining her, even that third pasuk is talking about the son yarshining her, v'lavar lav b'shnei lavin va'asay. It's all talking about the son. Why do I have three psukim to tell me that if the son yarshins her, she's in violation of the son from a different shevet yarshins her, she's in violation of two lavin and asay? It's just piling on isurim for the son yarshining her. Nothing to do with the husband at all. Well, tashma, that's why I have a fourth pasuk when it talks about the kavura of Elazar. It says Elazar ben Aaron meis, that Elazar ben Aaron died and they buried him in Givas Pinchas Beno. So it sounds like this karka didn't come from his father. Where did Pinchas get karka that he didn't get as Yerusha from Elazar, his father, right? Elazar ben Aaron dies, and they bury him in property that belongs to his own son. What do you mean it belongs to his own son? How does his son own any property if it didn't come from the father? It must be that Pinchas married a woman, and that woman died, and Pinchas yarshined that woman, and therefore you see that a husband yarshined. So this, you can't start talking about that maybe he came from the son, or whatever. It must be that he got married and he yarshined from his wife. So you see that Baal yoresh es ishto. Now, it's interesting, the Gemara wanted to say that the first three psukim maybe are all about Hasabas HaBen. And why do I have three psukim? Instead of saying that one of those psukim might be about Hasabas HaBaal, that the husband is the one that's taking the Yerusha, we have all three about Hasabas HaBen. And why do I have three? Shnei Lavin and an Asay. So the Rishonim point out, the Ritva points out, there's a Beferish of Gemara in Psachim. The Gemara in Psachim, Daf Chavdal, it says, when you have many psukim that seem to indicate the same thing, and you have to utilize each pasuk, and you have the option of either saying each pasuk is coming to teach me something new, or it's just doubling down and tripling down on the same iser over and over again. We much prefer to say that it's teaching something new. We'll only say that it's doubling down on something. It's lav or lav b'shnei lav and lav or lav b'shnei lav. We'll only do that when there's no other option, when there's no other limud to be made. Over here, we know that there's another limud to be made. We're struggling with that limud. We're trying to suggest what that limud is. And yet we're still willing to say, oh, lavra lav v'shnei lav and vasei. Why would the Gemara do that? It seems in violation of the rules. So the Ritva says, because this din that a husband yarshins his wife is such a great chiddush, because a husband is not really a karov to his wife, so it's such a mechudush dikadrasha, it's considered that he yefshar lidrosh. Meaning it's considered that there's nothing else to do with this pasuk, and therefore I'd rather say that the Torah is doubling down and tripling down on the same misser rather than teaching me a new din. That's quite a chiddush, right? To say that this is such a chiddush dikadin that it's considered yefshar, that there's nothing to be dorish, but it's a question that begs itself. So okay, so now we have four psukim, and it's the fourth pasuk that teaches me Yerusha Sabal. V'chitema, maybe you're going to say, who told you that the case of Pinchas owning land is a result of Yerusha Sabal? No, maybe Elazar, who denasav itza, Elazar, the father, was the one that had married someone, and the giva that he was ultimately buried in belonged to his wife. Umesa, his wife died, v'yarta Pinchas. And Elazar didn't get the Yerusha, because the husband doesn't get a Yerusha. Pinchas got the Yerusha because he was the son. So maybe that's what happened over here. Maybe it's all about Yerusha Saben. How did you want to prove Yerusha Sav? Because the pasuk says Elazar got buried in land that belonged to Pinchas. How else would Pinchas own land that Elazar didn't own, unless Pinchas got married and yarshined it from his wife? Well, I'll tell you how else. Maybe Pinchas yarshined it from his mother. And when she died, Elazar, the husband, didn't yarshin it. Pinchas, the son, yarshined it. So it just shows me again Yerusha Saben and not Yerusha Sabal. So again, v'chitem Elazar denosavitza, that Elazar is the one that got married, Umesa, and she died, v'yarta Pinchas, and Pinchas yarshinder, so tashma. That's why I have the pasuk in Divrayam Aleph, usguv holides Yair, and said that he had 23 arim be'eretz ha-gilad. Where did Yair get all these cities that did not belong to his father? It must be that Yair got married to a woman that owned all these lands. She died. He yarshined her. So must be that husband could yarshin his wife. Says Gemara, really? Must be? V'chitei masam nami hachihu. Maybe over there also, the same story. Not that Yair married a woman and she died and he yarshined her. No, maybe the father married a woman and she died and the son yarshined her. Yair was the son, not the husband. Imkain trei kari lamali. Yeah, but then why would I need two different psukim to tell me that same idea? Must be that both are possibilities, that both the Yerusha Saben is a possibility and Yerusha Sabal is a possibility, and that's why I have two different psukim that talk about a son mysteriously owning land that a father never owned. How does that happen? Well, two psukim to tell me both ways are possible. It's possible that he yarshined it from his mother, and it's possible that he yarshined it from his wife. Now, the Gemara's suggestion over here was that Elazar was the one who married a woman from a different shevet, and she's the one that was morish that land to Pinchas, is a little bit difficult. The Achronim point out, because we already said that Elazar took an isha mibnos Putiel, which was Yisro. Yisro didn't have any chelek in Eretz Yisrael. It was only Doshna Shal Yericho that was given to him at Sheivna Amigdash. So nevertheless, the Gemara said earlier, though, that his wife was miuchasas to Shevet Yosef. So it could be that Nachla came from the Bnei Shevet Yosef to Pinchas' mother. Say, Nochinami, Elazar married Mibnos Yisro, but he also married Mibnos Shevet Yosef. So it could be that's how it funneled through the mother to get to Pinchas, bypassing Elazar. So now we've accounted for all five psukim. The first three were Lavra Lav, Bishnei Lavin Va'asei for Yerusha Saben. The fourth one told us that you can have a son who owns fields, who owns property that his father did not own, and therefore the father was buried in the son's property. That might also be about Yerusha Saben. But then the fifth one, where again it talks about a son owning property that the father didn't own, that must be about Yerushas Habal and not about Yerusha Saben. So I asked the Gemara, Amalei Rav Papa L'Abaye, Mimai, how do you know that we could darshan the Pesukim like this? Dilma liyomei melach ba lo yaris. Maybe I'll tell you, a husband does not yarshin his wife. Ukrayi besibas haben. And all the three psukim, first three psukim, are all about a son yarshining a mother. Kiddushaninon, like we said, lavra lo b'shnei lavin vasei. The first three are all about that. The Yair and the Raya from Yair, where did Yair ever own anything from that his father didn't own? Maybe the fact that he had karkaus that his father didn't own was not because he yarshened his wife. Maybe this Zabin Misban. There's another way that you could own karka that your father didn't own. You became, you got a good job, you made some money, and you bought the karka. You went into real estate. So that could be how you own karka. What about Pinchas? Pinchas Nami. Where did Pinchas get land to bury Elazar in? If Pinchas didn't inherit that land from Elazar himself, this Zabin Misban. Maybe not that Pinchas inherited from his wife. There's no such thing as Yerush Sabal. Maybe Pinchas bought this Giva where he buried his father, and it didn't come as a Yerusha from his wife. So the Pasuk isn't teaching us Dina Yerusha. The Pasuk is telling us these Psukim about the land that Pinchas owned and the land that Yair owned are there to teach us, Rosh Baum says, how rich Pinchas and Yair were. It has nothing to do with Dinim of Yerusha. It's just telling us, look what wealthy people they are, that they bought their own properties, that they bought all of this real estate. So Amalei, so the Gemara says, no, that can't be. It can't be that Pinchas purchased real estate and buried his father in that real estate that he bought. Because Pinchas tezav mizban lo matzis amrit. It's not possible that Pinchas bought this land. Dim kein, nimse sada chazeres b'yovel. Because any land that you buy is going to go back to the seller during Yovel. V'nimse tzad kavar b'kevr shein shlo. But his father's buried there. So you're gonna take the land where he buried his father and it's going to go back to the original owner? That would be terrible. Because then Elazar is a tzaddik. It's a genai that he's going to be buried in a land that doesn't belong to him. Doesn't even belong to his family. So it's not mistaber that he'd be in karka, that he'd be buried in karka that was purchased. It must be that the karka came through Yerusha. How did this come through Yerusha? Because Pinchas yarshined it from his wife. The Mishnah Melech raises the question, how does the Gemara have a tzad to say that he purchased his karka, dug a kever, and buried his father there? The Yerushalmi in the fourth parak of Gittin says that if a person is kona sada mechavero, bizman shayovel noeg, you're not allowed to dig and be makalkal the sada. That we darshan it from v'shavla chuzaso, that the karka has to remain as is, that there are limits when you buy karka that doesn't belong to you, that you know is going to have to return at Yovel, you're not allowed to do whatever you want on that karka. Because you have to be mindful of the fact that it's going to go back to that family. So forget about the fact that it's a genai litzadik to be buried in karka shein l'shelo. You're not allowed to. Pinchas wouldn't be allowed to bury Elazar in such karka. So the Mishnah Lamelech suggests it could be that he got reshus from the Bala Sada. That think about it. Pinchas is burying Elazar. Elazar is a big famous tzadik. The guy who owns the karka thinks, wow, I don't know what I'm going to do with this field now. But if I get a big tzaddik buried there, will be a tourist attraction. I'll be able to charge admission. I don't know. I could do stuff with this. So he gave rishus to bury Elazar. Yeah, but it would still be a genai. So that's why the Gemara highlights that it not so much that it's usur for Pinchas to bury Elazar there, but that it would be a genai for Elazar to be buried there if the land would just go back at some point. In Chuvus Chsam Sofer, in Yerodea, Simon Shin Lamed, he writes that which they sell land for a kever is so that a tzaddik would not be covered by kever sheina shalom. Meaning he thinks it's an appropriate chumrah that even if, let's say, you have someone who wants to give his own land for a tzaddik to be buried, he should always take some money for it because the tzaddik should purchase that land to actually belong to him because it's not proper for a tzaddik to be buried in a land she'ina shalom. The Rambam writes that we don't move a mace from one kever to another, even from a bazui to a mechubad, from a kever that's mevuza to a kever that's mechubad. And if it's betoch sadehu, then we move him even from a mechubad to a bazui, because that's all considered his field. The Ramban in Torah Sa'adam says, you're not allowed to move a mace or a tzamos for the tzorich of another mace, and certainly to clear out space and to make a kever mechubad more mechubadik kever is aser. But for his own kapara and for his own kavav, to bring him to Eretz Yisrael or to bury him by Kivrei Avos is mutter. So there's machlokas achronim if by the din of a mace who buys a kever while he's alive and they buried him in another kever. Does that also fit under that qualification of what the Ramban says? Right? I mean, you're not allowed to move a mace stam, but you're allowed to move a mace to bring him to Eretz Yisrael. You're allowed to move a mace to bring him to Kivrei Avos. Why? Because that's considered an upgrade. That's considered more mechubadit for him. Are you allowed to move a mace if you buried him in someone else's land and now you want to bury him in land that he bought? Meaning you bury, they do a whole funeral, someone dies suddenly, they don't know that he owns, they assume he never bought karka, that he never bought himself a burial plot, so they bury him and then they're going through the papers and they're going through the emails and whatever, and they see that he actually owns a piece of land two cemeteries over in Farmingdale or whatever, you know, like so not to Eretz Yisrael and not to whatever, but just the next cemetery over. Are you allowed to move him for that, so that he could be in Karka that he himself owns? So that's the discussion in the Achronim. The Chassam Sofer says that it's mutter, based on our sugya by Pinchas Nimsa Tzadik Kavod B'Kever Shein Shlo, apparently is a big deal, and the Mishle Melech says that it's pashut that you're not allowed to do that, that it's for sure going to be usher to move him for anything short of bringing him to Eretz Yisrael or bringing him to Kivrei Avos, assuming that he was not buried El Tanai, you know, to be that it should only be temporary. Okay, Ela Ema, so that Rav Papa asks Viter that maybe we could reject the raya denafle mistecha rabin. Maybe this karka that Pinchas had to bury his father in was from a field that someone was makdish with the lashon of cherim Hashem, where a kohen was zochen, and it doesn't go back to the Bailim at Yovel, and therefore there was no problem of burying his father in there because it was land that never belonged to his father. He got it when it went to Kohanim at Yovel, because he was a Kohen, so he got it when it went to Kohanim at Yovel, and never has to go back anywhere at the next Yovel. So he owned that land. You still don't see that it came from getting married. So it's not a hechrich that a husband is going to yarshin his wife. Now, the Gemara moves on to a different discussion. The Torah says, V'chol bas yoreshes nachal matos b'nei Yisrael le'echem mishpachas matei aviyah tia li'isha, that she should only marry someone from, since she yarshins from her father, she should only marry someone from her father's shevet. So the Gemara had already said that pasuk is talking about a woman who yarshins from shnei matos, because it says, yoreshes nachal mimatos b'nei Yisrael, meaning her father was from one shevet, her mother was from a different shevet. They both died and there were no sons. It was just a daughter. So she yarshin both mom and dad. And the Torah is saying when she gets married, she better marry someone from her father's shevet so that she's not taking her father's nachla and bringing it into a different shevet. How is she bringing it into a different shevet? Okay, that was the conversation we just had. Either her husband yarshining her son yarshining her, but be that as it may, if she gets married to someone from a different shevet, she's bringing it to a different shevet. So I'm going to buy sof, how did you solve the problem by having her marry someone from her father's shevet? We said we're talking about a woman who yarshined both mom and dad. If her mom was from a different shevet than her father was, so she's even if she marries someone from her father's shevet, but she's not marrying someone from her mom's shevet, so she's anyway being maver nachla. So says Mara Mimai, how do you know that we have to be choshish for avaras nachla of the mother by getting married to someone from the shevet that her father belonged to? V'dilma shayni yasam shekvar husba. Maybe that wouldn't be a problem because it's already too late. It's already been removed from the shevet, because once the daughter yarshined it, the daughter's misyachis after her father. The daughter belongs to the shevet of the father. So once she already yarshined mom's estate, it's already moved to a different shevet. So the fact that she's going to marry someone from the father's shevet is not an act of moving her, the nachlas ha'aim, to a different shevet. That has already moved because she's yarshined it. So Abaye says, the Rashbam changes the gears from Amar Leh to Vidilma Shekvar Huspa Lo Aminan. Maybe that svar of Shekvar Huspa is not correct. Maybe even though the nachla went from the shevet of the mother to the shevet of the daughter who is connected to her father's shevet, maybe that's not called an akiras nachla, because the daughter herself is not really purely, she's not a purebred of her father's shevet, she's a combination of mom and dad's shevet. So maybe since the nachla is is half moved, meaning the nachla that she got from mom used to belong to mom's shevet. Now it belongs to the daughter, and the daughter is 50-50. She's half dad's shevet, half mom's shevet, so it's partially been moved. Now the daughter is going to go get married to a guy from dad's shevet. It's now going to be, and she's going to be morishit to her husband or her son. Now it's going to be fully removed from mom's shevet. So maybe, yes, it's partially moved at this point, but maybe the Yisr should still apply because it's going to be fully moved. I understand very well if you're going to say that there's no Yisr of Havaras Nakhla over here because it's already been removed from mom's shevet once the daughter has it. So then I can understand what the Pasuk is telling me, that she should marry someone from dad's shevet and then she'll solve all the problems. Whoever is going to Yarshin, or whether it be her husband or whether it be her son, as long as it's from dad's shevet, that's going to be okay. But if you don't say this svara of kvar huspa, that once the girl herself has it, has mom's nachla, if you don't say this svara, that it's already been removed, and you say, no, it's only half removed, and by getting married, it's going to remove it fully, then how is the Torah solving anything by telling her to marry someone from her father shevet? Hamis akranachla. It's still going to be an akiras nachla. Mi shifta di'ima l'shifta da'aba, from the shevet of her mother to the shevet of her father. So what tawelis is there by the Torah telling her marry someone from your father shevet? So it must be that we're not choshesh for the akiras nachla se'ein. That and Abaye Safik isn't correct. Meaning from the fact that the Torah tells me that she should go and marry someone from her father shevet must be that solves all the problems, and therefore must be telling me that there's no problem of being mavir the nachla that she got from her mother to the nachla of her, to a different shevet when she marries someone from dad's shevet. Why? Because it must be kvar huspa nachla, that when she yarshed her mother, it was already moved. It's already considered moved to a new shevet, so you're not going to be in violation of the isser of moving it a second time when it then goes to her husband or to her son, who's from the same shevet as her father anyway. So, which by therefore means the same shevet as her. So Vashi responds, no, it could be that according to this tzad of Abaye Safek, that were choshesh for akiras nachla from the mother, the Torah, it could be that the pasuk could still make sense, even if this tzad of Abaye Safek is correct. Meaning it could be that we really are concerned that a girl is going to take the nachla she got from her mother and bring it to a different shevet when she gets married. How does the Torah solve anything then when it tells her that she can only marry someone from her father's shevet? How's that going to solve the problem of the nachla of the mother? Maybe what the Torah is telling her is not just to marry a man that's from her father's shevet. No, find a man who has the same yichus you have. That just like this girl has a father from one shevet and a mother from another shevet, find a man who has a father from one shevet and a mother from another shevet. And then she'll say, yeah, I'm taking mom's nachla and I'm bringing it, it's going to go to my husband. But my husband it doesn't belong fully to one shevet, just like I'm a crossbreed of two different shvatim. He's a crossbreed of two different shvatim. So the nachla already belongs to me, so it's already straddling two shvatim. Then I'll give it to my husband, and it will weiter straddle the same two shvatim. And maybe that's what the Torah is actually telling her to do. So it says, if that's what the Torah is telling her to do, to be makbid about the nachla of the mother to such an extent that she's got to marry a man who comes from the same two shvatim that she comes from, father from the same shevet and mother from the same father from the same shevet as her father and mother from the same shevet as her mother. Hayle echad mimshrachs matei avia v'ima mibayilei. Chumash doesn't say that. The Chumash says she should marry someone from her father's shevet. But according to what we're suggesting right now, that we're so concerned she's going to take her mother's Yerusha and bring it out to a different shevet, and therefore she has to marry a man whose father is from the same shevet as her father and mother from the same shevet as her mother, Torah should have said that. It should have said that she has to marry a man who's mimata aviyah v'ima, but it doesn't. It only says mata aviyah from the fact that it says le'echad mimishpachas mata aviyah, so it's muchach that the Torah is not makbid about the nachlas ha'im, because it's already gone. It already belongs to the daughter, and therefore it's already been removed from the mother's shevet anyway. So therefore, Abaye Safek is incorrect. There's no makom for Abaye Safek, meaning there is no such concern that when a woman gets married, that she's taking mom's Yerusha and bringing it out to a different Shevet. It's already in a different Shevet because she already has it and she belongs to a different Shevet. So says Gemara, no, the Torah could not, why are you rejecting this possibility that the Torah is telling her to marry a man who has the same yichus that she has on both sides? You're rejecting that possibility because you're saying then the Torah should have said it. Now I'll tell you why the Torah didn't say it. Maybe the Torah really means it, but it doesn't say it because if the Torah would have said Mata Avia Ve'ima, that she has to marry someone from Mata Avia Ve'ima, Hava Mina Afilu Ibcha, I might have thought that the Torah requires that her husband be from the same two Shvatim that she's from, but that it doesn't matter where dad's from, where mom's from. Meaning that maybe her husband's dad is from the same Shevet as her mom, and her husband's mom is from the same Shevet as her dad, and that would be just as good. So no, but Kamash Mlan, that's why the Torah Dafka highlights, marry a man from the Shevet Aviha, from the same Shevet as her father. To highlight that even if we view people as a crossbreed, right? We don't view people. I mean, this whole thing is a chiddush, right? I would imagine we don't view people as a. We would always imagine like you go with your father shaven and that's it, and you're not viewed as some combination of father and mother's shvatim. But even if we do view people as some combination, it's not a 50-50 combination. The emphasis certainly is on the father, right? So if she's considered 70% from her father's Shevet and 30% from her mother's Shevet, right? The emphasis is on the father. She cannot marry a man whose father is from her mother's Shevet and whose mother is from her father's Shevet, because she's still going to be maverick the percentages of the Nachla to someone who has a different yichus than her. So maybe that's why the Torah Dafka highlights Aviyah, to tell me that she's got to marry someone who has the same exact yichus as her, mother and father, but remember that the father's a stronger yichus than the mother's yichus is as far as defining the Shevet. So it leaves everything open-ended, right? Meaning everything's a possibility over here, right? We left all the conversations we had today so far, we left open-ended, right? The first conversation we had about is there a Yerusha Sabal from these psukim, or is it all about Yerusha Sabayin, and we can explain all five psukim to not be teaching me Yerusha Sabal? Yeah, we explained all five psukim to somehow not be teaching Yerusha Sabal. They tell me how rich Yair was, and they tell me all sorts of, and there are ways that people could own land that didn't come through Yerusha Sabal, and to Lavin and Asay, we came up with ways to explain all five psukim. And then the second possibility, that you have to worry about the Nachla she has from the mother marrying into someone from the father's Shevet, that even that's a concern. Yeah, that might be a concern. Who knows? So we leave it open ended. We don't have a clear resolution to any of it. So now the Gemara says, once we quoted psukim that speak about the iser of removing the nachla from one Shevet to another, and we said that it's not necessarily al yedei habal. It could be that there is no Yerusha Sabal. It could be that it came al yedei the son, and it's just telling me many psukim to tell me that iser over and over again. Etc. So now we're going to bring Brisos to disagree, and that Darshan actually Yerusha Sabal from these psukim, and the Rashbam points out the Tanoim of these Brisos clearly assume that if you have a new, like we said before from the Gemara Pesach Mechavdal, if you have another din to learn from repetitive psukim, you don't just say, oh, the Torah must be doubling down, lavra lav lav asay, bishnei lav asay. No, if there's another din to learn, then you're supposed to learn that other din. That's what the Brisas we're about to quote seem to assume. So Tanya, we have a Brisa, Besiba Saben, that talks about Hasavas Hanachla through a son, by removing Nachla from her parents, from her father's Shevet, to her husband, to her son's Shevet. Vitanya, and we have another Brisa that talks about Besiba Sabal, about the Isser of Hasavas Nachla by the fact that she's going to be Morish, the Nachla of her father, to her husband, and that's why she's not allowed to marry a man from a different Shevet than her father's from. Because the Pasuk says, in Bamidbar Paraglam Vav Pasuk Zayin Velo Sisov Nachla Libnei Yisrael Mimata El Mata. So that's Besibus Benachas Medaber. Right? If you only had one pasuk that tells us that she has to marry a man from the same Shevet as her, okay, good. That just means that because we're concerned that her son will yarshin her, and when her son yarshins her, it's taking the Nachla away from her father's Shevet. But are you sure it's because of the son yarshining her? Maybe it's about the husband yarshining her, and there's such a thing as Yerusha Sabal. Kishulomer, when the pasuk says just two psukim later, velosis of nachla mimata lemate acher, harib sibis balamur. Ah, second pasuk, that must be teaching me about the husband yarshining her, that she cannot marry a man from a different sheva because the husband will yarshin her. Ah, yomani mekayim lotis of nachla mimata lemate almate. So then what do I do with the other pasuk? Sibis aben akasim medaber. So this price is explicit against the conversation that we had in Amud Aleph. Right, in Amud Aleph, we said, no, it's a lover of Balabasei, Bishnei Lavinvasei. It's all about Sibis Aben. There is no such thing as Sibis Abal because there's no such thing as Yerusha Sabal. This price says, the second we have two psukim, it must be that there's Yerusha Sabal and that there's an Isra of Hasava, Hasava Sanachla, both through by bringing it to her husband and by bringing it to her son. That's from tomorrow. We'll pick up with Netanya Edoth on the top of Kuf Yud Gimel Aleph. Everyone have a wonderful day.